Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West, y'all.
All right, we are now tuned in to episode 551 of the best show on the web, hip-hop represented, Off the Cuff Radio. I'm your host, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and this show is sponsored by Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Fleetwood and the Cot Pickers, Da Vinci Clothing, Core Financial, Jesse Petit. Got my host T-Max with the facts on the line. What's good?
What it do? Another fresh and fantastic Friday on that outstanding frequency known as OTC. I am the co-pilot to your head pilot, King Air the Rule. This is T-Max with the facts. Shout out to our co-host with Spirit, a lot of Sam L. H. and Chilla. And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, once again in the line of legendary shows, we have another legendary show. This man right here, and if you know your hip-hop, you know the indelible imprint that the state of Florida with the Sunshine Swag has bought hip-hop. A lot of you may know it as, you know, of course, Two Live Crew, shout out to, you know, Lou, you know, rest in peace, Fresh Kid Ice. And that lineage of the bass bodaciousness, there were so many other acts that were birthed by them. And this man we have tonight with us is part of that new generation of the 90s who followed in that tradition. You know, of course, words cannot express how much Thrill the Player has and his group, the 69 Boys, have contributed to some of the most 808 outstanding, booty shaking, bass fantastic songs, and videos as well. If you're old enough like we are, you understand how fresh that era was. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, representing Jacksonville, Florida, one of Florida's sons and a living legend, and we're so grateful and thankful to have him with us. Thrill the Player. What it do, man?
Hey, what's going on, Fuss?
What's going on, man?
Happy to be here.
Man, look, it's absolutely an honor, man. I mean, look, we, man, this is one thing we love about doing radio in terms of being able to talk to the legends we grew up listening to, idolizing, listening to the music, bumping and grinding on the bays, courtesy of the booty shaking great greatness that y'all gave us, man. Look, welcome to Off the Cuff, man.
Yeah, hold out, man. Shouts out to everybody out there that's ever supported a 69 Boy record, that's ever done the Tootsie Roll. Shouts out to y'all fellas as well for having us, man. It's just a blessing to be here after all these years still putting out music and making the people dance.
Absolutely. So, like we do about this time, let's get into the history of it. You know, we got a couple hours. Let's get it, you know. Run with it, you know. I mean, just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, how the group came to be, you know. And, of course, you know, you got new music. We're going to get to that as well. But let's talk about the genesis, how it all started.
Pretty much 69 Boys as a group came from the Quad City family. The groups in the Quad City family is 95 South, Quad City DJs, 10 Cans, this and that, K-Knock. But I was a writer for all the groups, started in Jacksonville.
Wow.
As a musician in school, a kid that dabbled in rap early won the elementary talent show doing the Rapper's Delight, which started the bug to want to be an entertainer. And by the time I, you know, graduated and went into the Army and came back home, I was able to get my start in the music industry from the family record store, Big Al, who raised me like a father, with my goddad, but just worked in the record store. Worked with a lot of the artists from Uptown that MCA would send down. I was the guy that would take all the artists around and meet the distributors, Mary J. Blige, Jodeci, H-Town, all those groups back then. And, you know, it branched from being a bug that bit me to want to entertain, to learn the business side, and then to hooking up with the Quad City fam and going from there.
Man. But what was it like during that time in hip-hop in Florida? Because, of course, you know, you had Luke that was, like, from the 80s and such that was, like, doing it, of course, with Two Live Crew. So you all were kind of like that second gen of greatness that was coming in. Tell us about the Florida scene just in general, about what it was like and what inspired you all in terms of, like, I mean, look, everybody thinks of Sunshine, Bikinis, Babes, of course, Miami Vice. You know, Scarface, I mean, Florida was just lit like that.
Well, it's definitely, you know, worldwide now today, it has a reputation of if anybody, you want to meet anybody crazy, they're going to be from Florida. But really, Florida is just pretty much something that's surrounded by coastline. And for us, musically, it was very not just then, but now that we always represent that, it's just so many different things.
Definitely, man. And when you look at, when you all really, you know, got to doing it, I mean, when you think about it, Florida has such a rich musical history, of course, of Morrisound Studios, so many artists have come from there, you know. Did you all know when you were doing it at the time what eventually it was going to turn into in terms of becoming, like, major like that?
I don't think nobody, you know, that get really – well, I won't say nobody. I know for us, it was – for me, it was never about just getting big. So, no, I didn't know how big it would get. I just always wanted to make just dope music, you know? So, and in doing that, putting it out, you know, I was always surprised at how big it grew. And even today, how it's still going, you know, people still learning and doing the Tootsie Roll. We was watching the Super Bowl, and Rihanna hit the Tootsie Roll during the halftime show. So,
I think mainly because you guys came in and y'all were able to carve your own lane because, you know, around when you guys was coming in, everybody was on the gangster speed. You know what I'm saying? Everybody was trying to be tough. Everybody was trying to be hard. So you guys carved a niche. You're like, look, we ready to just come in and have fun. So therefore, you had an audience like this. It's like, look, we ain't trying to come in with all that. We just want to go ahead, pull some baddie, dance, you know, dance a little bit, hit the club. And that's what you guys did. Y'all fulfilled that different void.
Yep. We still got him on air?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead, Thrill. Go ahead.
Yes. At the time, even though it was gangster worldwide, Florida, it's always been about up-tempo party. So even now,
yeah.
I have a song from New York. By the time it reached Florida, it's normally sped up. Tempo of it is sped up. So it's just dot, 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 you know. So even when the rest of the world was gangstered out, Florida, all, we might have had a JT Money here or there, but other than that, it was still always Uncle Lou, What We Did, or 69 Boys, or MC80E, or DJ Magic Mike, or you know, all those people just had dance music.
Yeah, man. I mean, you got, of course, DJ Jam Pony. We can't forget, you know what I'm saying? I mean, Clay D. You know, I mean, it was like, I remember growing up when we first heard about DJ Magic Mike. I'm in Virginia. King is in North Carolina, respectively. So this is during a time in the music where bass was, like, really heavy. You know, that 808s, that boom drop on it. But it was always, I think that's why Florida always had a, we always had a love affair with Florida, because it embodied the party city. You know, it was definitely always a good time. You know, like King said, it was about a kind of a break of just seeing a different type of vibe. That was all, I mean, you see the videos, it was, y'all always just had to have fun, man. It was just like, you know, that's, it's like, we couldn't look at a video from y'all and walk away mad. We were always happy after we saw it, because that's the type of vibes y'all put out for us.
Right. Without a doubt, and definitely. Thank you for that.
Yeah, man. So after y'all began to blow Thrill, and y'all are really getting made, what was the watershed moment for you all? Because you had a lot of offshoots as well. I mean, in terms of course, This and That. We're going to get to them later. I remember when I first saw them cuties, I was like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
You know, but also, too, man, I mean, when you think about that era, of course, Quiet City DJs, you know, Ghost Town DJs, all of them, because you all are in that same thing, you know, of down south with it. When did you all know that you all had a hit, and that not only was this a hit, this was going to be a hit that kept moving?
Right. Well, the weekend was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, cool. And then, and I apologize if it goes in and out. We out here in the boondocks, man. Okay, cool. So, but then after spring break weekend, a month later was Freaknik. So we had the good motion from spring break. But when we went to Freaknik and we shot the video, to see the whole city just like moving, because when you see the Tootsie Roll video, that's Freaknik in the background. And
to see
that kind of motion from the city, everybody just getting behind it. But we knew we had something special then.
And you know, Well, first of all, you got to tell our listeners out there, we're old enough to know about Freaknik. It is a crime of my childhood that I did not get to go to one. Whew, because I heard the stories and saw the videos.
And the VHS.
Between Black Spring Break in Daytona and Freaknik, what was it like during that time?
Oh, man. I mean, there was just, you know, at every time you always be like, it's live, it's lit, and you be like, man, why do they gotta act like that? But when you look back on it now, you was like, man, that was just love and harmony to the fullest, because it would be different little acts of stuff that would break out, nothing like today, but when we look back on it, we could appreciate it for the amount of harmony, just people in the street having a good time. It was just really like one big block party, man, but all over the city, you get what I'm saying? So if you could pull up in that and then have a not choreographed video shoot, but just going with the motion and going with the flow and the energy of the people, whether it was the Freaknik, and the same thing at Black Beach, The only difference between the two was just add a beach to one of the
right.
to the Freaknik. If it could have a beach on it, then that you would have like spring break.
And when you think about that time, y'all, there was never, and this is really over 30 years later when it was at its peak, even give or take maybe 25 years at its peak, but you never heard any, like, we've heard of infamous moments in terms of award shows where fights broke out, video shoots where fights broke out, and shootouts broke out. You never heard anything about Freaknik or Black Beach where anything bad happened in terms of any real violence. Like you said, man, it was like it was never like that, like it would be today. And I say it's bittersweet because I love my Black people. We love all people, but we love our Black people especially. And it's just with the way the vibe is now, man, it's like that'd be hard. That'd be hard to get that many people together. Because you figure, like you said, Van, you think downtown Atlanta, now, to give our audience some historical context behind this, you got to think about it. This is when LaFace with LaFace Records is doing big things. This is when Jermaine Dupri with So-So Def is really beginning to kick off with Criss Cross and the Brat. You know, TLC is moving. Of course, Deion Sanders is a member of the Atlanta Braves and the Falcons at the time. I mean, Atlanta is just like nuclear hot in terms of entertainment. And Freaknik, like Thrill said, is basically like a one big block party all the way from Peachtree all the way down. And it's like it's traffic is stopped. Everybody just jump out of the cars. Everybody just starts partying. Everybody turn on their stereo and you just do what you do. Out in the open or in the car or wherever you can get it. But yeah, man, it's just crazy to think that we probably couldn't do something like that today. When you think about it then, as you all kept going with it, what was it like once you started touring and really taking it, you know, on the road? I mean, because obviously you had the Southern Hemisphere, but then you started touring. What was that like?
Oh, man, just every night a different city, you know? And you just grateful for it, because when you got a record out, you really, all the stuff you don't plan for them, because every day, especially in the early days of a hit record, you're just going everywhere to make sure that you service all the DJs and service the motion behind the record, so you don't really have time to pause and reflect. You just enjoy it as the ride starts. Like,
gotcha. And what was it like in terms of the marketing back then? I mean, because back in the day, you all did videos. I mean, it was like there seemed to be a real big, it was like a real big PR machine in terms of really pushing the product. And the music organically grew on its own. Tell us about what it was in terms of like A&R, promotion, everything in terms of what it went into once you all had the record, how to really, really like, you know, make it. Because some people have a hit record and they don't know what to do with it. You all had it and knew what to do with it. What was the marketing difference like back then as opposed to today in terms of having an album and a record first and then an album following it that would really, really define that generation and on top of it being, you know, a hit at that time?
Well, I guess from an end, well, let me answer the question from an end of label. Make sure I understand the question because I don't want to be long-winded. Can you ask the question again for me because I want to make sure I answer it where it
could be. No. Take as much time as you want answering. Just what was it like in terms of once you all, in terms of the PR movement behind it, in terms of once you really started, like, advertising, like, you know, how you all went about video shoots in terms of getting in Source magazine, of course, Right On, Word Up were heavy at that time. Shout out to John Blasting Game, you know, publishing, you know, and overall just knowing that, you know, once you saw the song was a hit, how it would prep for the record and then pushing the record. Because not only did you all have a hit song that was a classic to this day. You all created an album behind that that was just as nuclear and still classic. Take us through that whole process during that time. Take as much time as you want to answer it.
Right, yeah. Now, the marketing was pretty simple back then. It was pretty much the same thing for everybody. You shot a video, you printed up your posters, your postcards, and everything, and you hit the road. I think if you had a hit record and you were willing to get out and go from city to city and in cracks and crevices, because that was the marketing campaign back then. It wasn't Instagram, no Facebook, no Snapchat. So we had to literally go out like politicians from city to city and shake hands and kiss babies and do the dance and meet people, you know. And that was the marketing. It was just good old-fashioned elbow grease. What helped us is that we did partner with a label that was owned by the grandson of the radio guru, Jack the Rapper. So
the conventions,
And with that being one of the most powerful conventions, radio conventions, and being associated with that label, that's one of the things that God blessed us with, one of the avenues and the doors to get in the business that we had behind us that helped our marketing machine out the gate to be able to be, to have Jack the Rapper affiliated with our project helped us immensely.
So, and once it took off, what did you all learn about in terms of contracts? Obviously, you all are still doing well to this day in terms of royalties and everything, you know, and just performing. But what did you all learn early on about record contracts and how the industry really works in terms of the business side of it? Because not many artists understand that. They see the success of a song, but not the business in terms of how to make sure they get paid from that song.
Right, right. Yeah, now, coming in from the retail side helped me to understand, no matter who you are, when you go into a new business endeavor, it's going to be a learning curve, so you're not going to know everything. I always trusted on God to protect me, and to this day he has, because it's a shark's tank out here in entertainment. But for us, having to doing it independently was a benefit then, but there's no independent distributors now. There's no Selecto Hits. There's no Southwest Wholesale. So it would be too hard for someone to do that now. It's just online distributors. But if you go from city to city, and when it's time to get your music in Circuit City, or it's time to get your money music in Blockbuster, who also records back then, it was independent mom and pops, but the music scene, or having to go sit down with Handelman to get your records in Walmart. All of those things with me dealing with before, it made it a lot easier. It was just a bigger bowl of fruit, but nevertheless, I was familiar with apples, oranges, grapes, so I could kind of feel my way through it, and with the protection of God, be able to do some stuff.
Gotcha. So what was it like in terms of the expansion, in terms of where, you know, because obviously this and that will come later. When did you all really start looking at this from the business plan, laying it out for what would come next along the lines?
It was never no business plan. We just musicians. We weren't like a Will Smith or somebody who made music and then sat down with all these people to come up with a business plan. We just made good music and put it out in the hood, sort of like Jamponi. It wasn't about, you know, how can we sell? It was how can we get this played in the party to make our community jump? And when that started happening, the expansion itself was, once we saw, oh, okay, people like this. It wasn't like we went from 0 to 50. It was first we got our house, then we got our street, then we got our side of town, Then we got our city. Then we got our state. Then we got our region. It was literally that slow. When you say, like, what was the growth, sometimes the growth could be, oh, man, I dropped my record. And from Epic heard it, they came, bought me $250,000, and boom, we went from there to there. No. It's like growing. You don't realize you went from 5, 4 to 6 feet because you see yourself every day. So you don't realize, but a person who ain't seen you in 6, 8 months come out, but boy, you don't grow 3, 4 inches. What? So our thing was moving so slow, it's not like we was able to say, oh, man, we noticed the difference. All we know is we dropped the record, people liked it, so we started going from city to city. By the time we left Jacksonville to hit Brunswick, Macon, thing over in Atlanta, all of that, that's, you know, almost a year worth of just, okay, boom, let's go over here. Now we got to be promoted there. We got to go back in service and water what we just did. You know, so all of that, that's just, and that's Georgia. So you talking about a record, just the first single where we spent 24 months out promoting, servicing people who had done helped us and all of that before we could move on. It's dang near the time that people would spend to do a whole album. We had maybe did one or two singles. It was time for a new album, and we were still on the first album with that because the motion of trying to build it was so slow.
And you know when the records start really taking off, and this is one of the biggest challenges that a lot of Southern groups face, especially when they got a big record, is when they have to perform in the mecca of hip-hop and get that acceptance. I'm talking about New York City. Now, did you guys find that challenging to get accepted by New York, which was considered the mecca at the time?
Not really, because back then we had something called Video Jukebox. And Video Jukebox was like YouTube before YouTube, because with New York being the mecca and a lot of PR firms being there, they were able to tell a story that the rest of the world would have to follow. But when Video Jukebox came out, they could tell you, yo, Heavy D, yo, Big Daddy Kane, yo, Eric B and Rakim, yo, Dos Effects, yo, Tribe Called Quest. They could say all day, these are the biggest sellers. But when you go on Video Jukebox and you see, okay, Tribe Called Quest got 1 million views, but Luke and the 2 Live Crew got 3 million views. And then Tootsie Roll got 2 million views. So, yeah, they on Rap City. But when we come on Jukebox, it's showing, well, first of all, we running up our mama phone bill, calling to see these videos with all this booty shaking in it. But these guys over here got more views than what they did. So what it created was, when we were independent, we'll go to New York. We'll see groups like Mobb Deep. They'll be like, man, how y'all get that jewelry, man? Y'all independent. What y'all got? More so than people shunning us, they was looking at us like, man, hold on, what? We signed the labels up here. Y'all doing this independently. How y'all got all this? What's going on? So when we would go do shows, it was never from a grassroots standpoint, oh, nah, they ain't from New York. It was more so whether it was Biggie, whether it was Diddy, whoever, they'll always be fascinated by, like, yo, man, y'all boys got a different sound. Y'all boys doing it, and y'all ain't coming up here asking for no deals or nothing. What's going on? How y'all doing it? So it was always accepted. Our first show at 69 Boys in New York, Wu-Tang broke the door down because it at the country club. They wouldn't let them in. Because the club was at full. The fire marshal was like, yo, nobody else can get in. Wu-Tang broke the door down on that night. And then we left that club and said, yeah, man, Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to F with.
Hey, T-Mac, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Had to step
out
for a second.
Yeah, we have a little connection. Oh, yeah, you good. But, yeah, man, he was telling us the story about what happened when they performed in New York for the first time at the 69 Boys and how Wu-Tang kicked the door down.
Yeah, man, but I mean, that work ethic y'all had was crazy back then, man. Like you said, you know, y'all be, you know, showing off for one song while everybody's got another album coming up and whatnot. I mean, so when you see all that time moving, I mean, like you said, Video Music Box, shout out Ralph McDaniels and everything. I mean, once you're in rotation, it's like, man, I know it was just crazy. So what was it like during the process of recording that album as y'all went along with it?
The album was just something that, you know, I started out initially writing for to come out right after 95 South, but this and that took off first. So I was working on their album, my album, and helping with the 95 South project and Quad City DJs as a writer. So a lot of stuff started taking off, which pushed our project back. It didn't come out. So working on our album gave us more time. And with that stuff taking off, it just gave me about a full solid year and a half to just make the album a super solid project.
And going back to what you guys were talking about, being independent also, you also went platinum with no features because at that time everything was pretty much feature heavy. Like you had to have a big time feature for you to even see gold, but you guys come in and got it from the mud. That was impressive within its own.
Yeah, no, without a doubt, man. Appreciate it. The only feature was just the groups that we were coming out with, like Quad City DJs. But, you know, you're right, man. A lot of people were relying on features back then, but for us, the music scene was so unexploited and there was so many people that liked it. We didn't have to rely on features. We just needed to put that sound out so it was going to do what it do.
Yes, sir. And on top of that, going around that time period, now, if my memory could be fresh, but did you guys perform at the 1994 or the 1995 Sus Awards?
Yep, the greatest Sus Awards show ever, the 95 Sus Awards. Yeah, we performed at that, man.
Now, was the atmosphere really tense like people say it was at that time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you could definitely cut it with a knife. I mean, it's East Coast, West Coast. They had pitted a whole coast against a whole coast. So being in the middle and being from the South, you know, like we said, we wasn't on no gangster vibes. We was gangsters, but we wasn't on that gangster vibe. We was on, man, party, have fun. So remember, this is during the time of the whole, no fighting. We spent time to fight to get tail. But the rest of these guys, you know, bumping heads on this East-West thing, we just hit pick up our award, do our performance, and keep it moving. So it ain't with Outkast and Goody Marvin and everybody from the South. We just here to have fun because the South is more welcoming and, you know, family. We all feel like it's a family. Death Row wasn't here and there. The New World was from Alabama.
Now, it's one thing about it, too, Thrill, when y'all are talking about the 95 Source Awards, which is a classic. But some people also said that was also the beginning of the South's rise when Andre 3000 said, you know, the South got something to say. And that was really, you know, that was really kind of ushering in at that time. You know, Outkast was coming in, you know, Goody Mob, that whole organized noise. I mean, it was really another generation of what was going to become that next big thing down there. When you all first heard Outkast down there, you know, because obviously you all were, you know, in the same region and intermingling, what was it like for you all hearing them? Did you all know that they were going to turn into what they did at that time?
Yeah, all we know is our whole first album, all we listened to going up and down the road was Southern playlist, kind of like funky music. That's what we knew. It it was just, we liked music. You know, when we put on Al Green today, I don't think about how big of a star he is. I think about how good this sound. So Outkast, yes, it was huge in the South already, but it didn't matter if it was huge or not, because remember now, in a whole country where everything else is hot, Nas and BDP and the Death Row, we still was listening to MC80E, Magic Mike, Two Live Crew. We was listening to stuff that mattered to us in the South, not what everybody else was listening to, just that. We'll listen to it, but it wasn't just based on, yeah, Outkast was number one in our deck before it was number one in the country.
Yeah, man, history indeed in terms of how it went. You know, so pretty much after that time, you know, you all are moving, you all are watching. How's the game constantly changing along the lines of the music as you all kept moving with it? Of course, gangster rap was still kind of big, West Coast, you know, of course, East Coast, West Coast. How did you all pretty much, because you all already were from the streets to begin with, and what is notable always, too, Thrill, is that, like you said, the South was always welcoming, so you all didn't get into the beef aspects of it. What was it like in Florida coming up in terms of the streets? You know, of course, you're from Jacksonville, one of the realest hoods out there. You know, shout out to Blood Raw as well. What was it like out there in terms of understanding the dangers of the streets and how you all kept the music and the streets separate? And once you all knew the music was your business, you made it that permanent business.
For, I think the, okay, the easiest way to say it is the younger back in the day of the street lifestyle and girls and stuff like that. I think as the streets grew, like trying to look at the streets now, people would never understand. That's why they don't understand, like, oh, no, Luke, Two Live Crew, 6ix9ine Boys, Clay D, them dudes was gangsters, but that's what the gangsters were doing. We'll go, we'll leave the block, everybody meet it at the club, go get some girls, just like when you watch that movie Straight Outta Compton. Yes,
right,
they
were
gangsters, but when they went to the club, it was like, no, we, this street dudes in the club doing party stuff. So with that being said, we didn't bring the streets to work. Today, these rappers bring their lifestyle to the music, and they even expect their fan base to be on what they own. Like,
right,
oh, okay,
right.
Y'all might not care about snitching, but we're going to question y'all like, y'all been listening to him here snitching? Sure, we're here for music. We're not here for the mayhem. Y'all live that lifestyle, so you're trying to make your real lifestyle equal to what's going on in music. So if Gunna say something, if Kasha 6ix9ine, any of these rappers out there say something, the street dudes in the music they had, they run, they bought their whole gangster code to it, and it just made it less fun. So you can have a dude like Drake, who they don't see as street, but he can differentiate his business from the street code and turn it into money, where a lot of the dudes out there are falling off left and right, whether it be through ops, whether it be through arrest, whether it be through death, whether it be through drug overdoses. Everything that you're bringing from the real street lifestyle and trying to incorporate it in this music that don't go makes it in quick, make the money in quick, make the career in quick. So now artists that came out last year, some of them who had big hits, we like, well, damn, shit, all the artists that was out, where they at? They gone. We don't even,
Like,
what's going on? You see what I'm saying? But that's what happened.
Right.
Incorporate that instead of being street dudes that do music and leave one separate apart. When you try to incorporate it to make it all, it's going to be no fun.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Gorilla. When we think about it today, we look at how this is like we said earlier, this is before social media. So your street reputation, if you was thorough on the block, you were already thorough and everybody knew it. You were looking at the music as an escape. When you think about all that was going on at that time, Convertible Burt, Big Ike, you had the Cocaine Cowboys all through Florida, not just Miami, but all over. You know, it's like it was really, really a situation. You really had to watch yourself out there. And I think with some artists today, y'all, they embrace too much of it from a level of trying to get out there in something that they really don't understand, number one, or two, do they think they're too hard to get nailed in. We look at situations that happened with Spot 'Em Got 'Em when they ran up on him. You know, we look at what happened with YNW Melly, you know, with the case he's fighting right now. Something changed along the lines where it didn't become about music anymore. It became about trying to really live a lifestyle that we've all been there. We know it's either dead or in jail. And it's the whole marketing is different now. You know, you all came from a real place where you really had to have something really moving to get the crowd moving. And now it's like because of the internet, you know, it's, anybody can be who they want to be. When you see it today, Thrill, especially with some of the your evolution has come in the music, how did it pretty much influence you and pretty much taking, you know, more of a staying in the game but kind of experimenting more as your career has kept going?
For me, it's just about not becoming a catalog artist. First of all, understanding that everybody's going to have a time at top. And that's what's going on now. It's not that the music is not moving now, but if you look at it, let's just take it by to when the Temptations, the Isley Brothers, Smokey Robinson, Martha, it was just a copycat industry. So when you put stuff out, you get those kind of acts. Well, what's the reciprocation of those kind of acts? You had my granddaddy had a baby from this lady, from Miss Barbara Jean down the street, from Lady Robin. Because what was going on, program directors programmed the community. So music, or soul music, because it gets, you got Temptations going off and Smokey Robinson coming on, and Smokey Robinson going off and Marvin Gaye coming on, and Marvin Gaye going off and Stevie Wonder. Then you see the unity of the hood that's being programmed. It's a love-making society. Then you move to the 70s. Now you got Curtis Mayfield coming on. Now you got this guy, Sly and the Family Stone, all this kind of thing. You got drugs. Then you look around the community in the 70s, even in the films, you can see. But that's what's happening. Then you move to the 80s. You got you got Heavy D and the boys and Father MC and that's the energy that's out there. And then you got the 90s that come along with the gangster, the G-Funk era. So what I'm saying is you're watching all of these different people have a time at the top. And now with the music that they put out, that was just their time at the top. Super popular people. That was who was putting out music before. So whatever came with their popularity, you could be in a viral generation, but you could be a popular scammer, or you could be a popular IG person, a Instagram model, or a popular shooter. It doesn't matter if you do they don't even do music and do a music thing. If they popular, they're going to take off already because it's going to popular people are going to accumulate views and analytics with people who spend money. So that's what we're being fair. Whatever's popular, it's that. But you can go back to that when Cindy Lauper was putting out music, and then Madonna, and then Boy George, and then you know they were saying, okay, well that's the gay crowd. That's what's popular now. That's what pop culture is. So you know, with us making music, it's always to look at what pop culture doing, and to go the other damn way. It's always been that way for us, and it's always going to be that way. Of course, we are in the lake, but we just a different kind of fish in the lake.
I like that. I like that. That's a great analogy, Thrill. When you talk about it, when we look at the music we came up on, and you all are just as part of our childhood as integral as anybody, I tell everybody it was just a different time having fun back then, man. Because the gangster shit was there, but when you talk about how the way you broke it down was just genius. Because when you talk about the whole element of it in terms of what was moving at the time, it was really about trying to, you know, like you said, what was popular. We listened to everything growing up. BET used to play all types of videos growing up. The radio played all types of songs. So our musical education was all over in terms of how we learned. And that's what made us well-rounded understanding it. But, you know, it's like now it's just one thing everybody's listening to, and that's how it is. And that seemed to be what the whole order is, how everybody's doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that, but it's that because not what the people are, program directors. And the program directors in the hood are the disc jockeys because it's called soul music for a reason. It gets into your soul and it leads the community. So if you can help to lead the gaze to where the community goes, should I say, and when the DJs fail, they fail the community. We can look at it from a radio standpoint. Let's start there. Let's look at the role urban radio has played in the urban community for the last 40 to 50 years. Urban radio was the voice that fed us when we couldn't get the information from the boob tube, from the television. Well, over the years, that model has outgrown itself, and instead of them redeveloping it, you have a lot of urban stations with tumbleweeds blowing through it, but they rather act as if they're still the medium that's gauging the community, and it's pure false. It's pure false. Here's what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest failure has been the DJs and urban radio, and what I mean by that is they have years of sweat equity in 69 Boys, in Snoop Dogg, in SWV, in Donnell Jones, in all these acts that are out. But since they're so used to redeveloping that model by saying, okay, the new thing is out. We got, I'm just going to say, an NXT Joe Blow. We got QRM Chopper. We got CSX Mad Dog. These are just names, so I don't have to say anybody's name in particular. But the new stream radio is trying to bring all these new artists whose listeners don't listen to the old medium.
Right.
My son, who is 17, has never bought me a new song to hear on the radio. He always brings it on Spotify or YouTube. So
you have
a media machine, the listener. The meanwhile, the years of sweat equity they put into the artist that he'll be making money off of with relationships on the white side, on the mainstream side, they play you in the pop station, and then they say, hey, man, we got sweat equity in this dude. We're not finna get him out of there. Move him down the hall to top 40. So it's an ongoing relationship. In the urban side, it's once everything get old, let's move on to the next thing. Well, they ran into a brick wall now because you could do that for many years because we all got our information from the radio. The new generation is a viral generation. They don't get their information from the radio. So the biggest failure for our generation is how they have not kept the medium going to keep the information going. That medium is where we heard Tom Joyner and Al Sharpton talk about voting. That medium is where we went to find out where the next hot concert is going to be. And it's being underserved and it's being underused. And what happens is you're going to watch a regentrification of radio where people can come in and undervalue urban radio and say, oh, wow, shit, ain't shit going on over here. That's why people buy up the publishing catalogs from everybody. You devalue something, buy it for a lower price, then bring it right back and own it in the stations. Oh, man, y'all ain't got that. Meanwhile, urban radio, they wait for Drake, Future, and all these new artists. They're never coming through. They start their records at Rhythmic. They're never coming through these doors again. What y'all need to do is Snoop just dropped a new album with E-40, with Ice-T69 just dropped a new project. SWB just dropped a new project. Hell, Bravo working with them. Bravo working with the Skate. What's wrong with all you urban stations that got these tumbleweeds blowing through it but still walking around with your chest stuck out like you got something on lock? That's a lie. That's failing us.
Grill, I don't think in all the years we've done this show, we've heard somebody break it down like you just did. We're kind of dumbfounded and amazed because that's like you hit it on so many levels. Because the DJ at his core is supposed to break in the new records. That's when we grew up, that's what it was. The DJ gets an album, or he gets a record, he puts it on the air, and he lets the people decide, you know, if it's going to be hot. You know, that's how it is. And now it's like they've just got to – I'm going to just be real. My brother King knows this. I haven't listened to – unless I'm at work, I don't listen to the radio casually. I mean, it's just the same playlist every day, the same 40 songs on black radio. And I'm like –
but advertisers, they're not pleasing
– yeah.
Because, see, they're not paying to please the listeners. They're paying to please advertisers.
Yeah, and it, you know, and I'm one of those people, I like to have different shit. Even if it's old school, I don't want to hear the same old school songs they put in rotation. I'm like, dude, I'm like, you know how many classics y'all got, and y'all just not playing it?
Yeah,
that
less is more thing is what you said right there with the advertisers. But you don't have you cannot see, and that's where it all went wrong, is not politics. Everything doesn't work. For example, in football, they played football for a long time with no face masks, with them helmets, them leather helmets that they just used to run around. But that didn't last forever. It was a season for that. Didn't have the face mask. Now they haven't got the helmet. The music is they're not looking at the real analytics. They're trying to gauge off what's going on now. Well, how do you gauge the town that, first of all, the demographic y'all using to gauge is 18 to 34. Them people can work a cell phone so good, they can build a house with a cell phone. They can cut a whole album with a cell phone. Your big, grown, old ass can't do that. So what you're trying to do is mix generations, but I don't care. Let's just take the simplest DJ in the hood. The DJ, if he got the party right, oh, he was going to get some ass at the end of the night. All the girls was going to be up there. But you got DJs that's held on so long in the 18 and up club thinking, if I play Nardo Wick, backed up by NLE Chopper, backed up by Drake, these young girls don't like me. No, those young girls are never going to fuck you, dog. They're not. That's not how this works. What happens is you need to take your big grown ass and start you a new night over here with the 30s and up. What happened back in the days was DJs had like an honor system. When they was past a certain generation, they started playing at. And what happened was the 18-year-olds run for the club, and they would, every year you would say, man, I can't wait till I turn 25. I can't wait to go to over there, the Jazz Co. I can't wait to go to to Jim's place, the grown folk club. So you'll have a bunch of young people who couldn't even get in, but they wasn't even going to their club. They was just looking, wishing to get in that. But since all the DJs okay to dress with a little bit more. They coming in here with all this jacked up in their ass for real. Let me stay over here playing the music, block out the young DJ. Well, no, what you're doing is the young DJ, and he finna start by saying, okay, yeah, that's Unk them, but y'all need to party with us. And woo, woo, woo. So it starts a civil war, not black against white, but young against old. So now you got all the young DJs appealing to the young crowd, making sure that they guard their market share. And then you got the old DJs who won't get off the pot and go mature, and all of the people who was 18 that just grew up with them, they still want to listen to you. They just don't want to hear that shit you playing. So whether it's radio or you run listeners off like Off the Cuff Radio who've been dedicated to you, or 69 Boys with this new shit you doing, and then the new people don't want nothing to do with you because the young boys are already blocking them off and making sure that they protect their market share and make sure, hey, man, we're going to have a club night, and then after they, since they old ass blocking, we're going to have an after party because they know at 1, 2 o'clock, them old ass niggas, they finna be sleepy tired anyway, go home to their wives. So we got to create a whole other market. It's a lot going on out here. But this is really what's happening. It all goes back to DJs not wanting to say, you know what, I rocked this shit when I was 18 to 25, 29. But now I'm 30, I need to go over here and mature me a neo-soul night. I need to mature me a disco night over here. And then what happens? Jumping because you have an entertainment complex, not just one or two DJs trying to pull up the crown talking about, I'm the shit, I run the block.
DJs, take note. Thrill's giving y'all game. OTC is the forum for where all this knowledge comes from, man. Okay, next up, we need to get Thrill as a head of some record label because obviously you got...
They don't have a... They have a clue on how to run it, but they don't care how to run it.
Well, I think in fairness, because we've had to do everything we had to do independently, because remember, man, we sold a million records before a label came to give us a shot with Tootsie Roll. We was already platinum. So a lot of this stuff we had to learn on our own. And then me, I started in retail, and then God blessed me I was successful in that because we had the biggest independent retail store in Florida. Then I started in music and went number one with that. And then I went to radio and went number one with that. God has blessed me to go number one with a lot of things, but to see them from the inside so I can learn the businesses. So a lot of artists haven't been blessed with opportunities and the hardships that I've had to go to learn the hard lessons or to understand what's going on. But I don't believe it's for, and just like it wasn't for everybody to be Michael Jordan, it's not meant for everybody to be me. I understand what's going on. I can help save Urban Radio. But as long as the biggest problem, man, what helped create the problem we got now is that era where the DJs became the artists. When the DJs came to artists in the late 90s to the 2000s, really messed the game up. Because in a food chain, everybody play a part in the food chain. And as long as everybody and they part in the food chain, then it works. Take rain out the food chain and tell me how that food chain gonna work.
It can't grow nothing. There's no water.
Take grass in. Yeah, no, take grass out. Let's put the rain back. Let's take the grass out. Okay, let's
ain't
take the grass back. Put that back. Let's take the animals out. It doesn't matter. Everybody got a part to play. What happens is when you get motherfuckers looking over here, oh man, shit, I'm tired of spinning these ref cards every night. I want to get the mic. And then you got the lawyer. He over here like, well, shit, you got a mixtape? I want a mixtape too. And then you got DJ finna put. So, and that's why all these years, I've tried to sign so many artists. I've tried to work with so many people. The only people who I see dependable consistently is Fantastic. That's the, because we do so much of it, and people want to end up doing, like, no matter what. You could be, let me tell you something. You could, I've seen DJs making more money than the artists that own the show with us. Now, they might be our DJ, so since you're higher in the food chain, you're making more than the artists that you were. But they'll rather walk away from the top-paying job so they could be the person in the front with the microphone. But, again, it's everybody doing the same thing in the food chain. That's what killed it. It's never going to work. Meanwhile,
but you know,
Scooter Braun, he over there doing what he do in the food chain. He'll come over here and, yeah, everybody know me. I know I bought Taylor Swift stuff. I bought that, but I buy shit. So I'm finna come over here. I ain't finna grab no money with me. I'm going to buy QC. I'm going to do what the fuck I do, not what I see you do.
And that's real. And I mean, man, this is like just so many gems being dropped. But that's the thing, though, Thrill. You know, me and King were talking about the other day. You know, once everybody gets a taste of that spotlight, it's hard to let it go once you see you can be in the spotlight and you see the celebrity, you see the amenities that come with it, you see the access, the privilege. That's hard for a lot of motherfuckers to let go. And, you know, and let alone when you see you can get into the – we're not going to name no names of, you know, because we know exactly who in that capacity that you, you know, as a reference point, who you could be referring to. But it's like once they got there, once they became celebrities in it, they felt like, okay, I'm going to parlay this into something else. I'm like, look, what you were doing – was already good. I'm like, it's almost like now some are being greedy in that aspect. Like, they want more. I'm like, and it becomes a gluttony of it. And the music begins to suffer because of it. Yeah.
Right. Anybody can be a glutton. Anybody can overeat. See, you don't have to have a talent to overeat. How many times we sat down at Thanksgiving? You just have to breathe. So with that being said, it's true that they didn't do it, but it's okay if you don't want to get up from the table and eat and lose your stomach big enough for that. What about the spotlight?
That's facts.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm looking in the spotlight, and it's a beautiful, beautiful woman with a banging body in the spotlight.
Right.
I don't, now, I'm not saying, okay, I don't want a kangaroo to jump in the spotlight, a literal kangaroo.
Right.
Not a woman that looks like me.
You're going out a little bit, because I know you're dropping some major jewels. Yeah, okay, we hear you now. Go ahead. What we saying?
We got people who may get the spotlight and take the spotlight from Michael Jackson, but if you're not going to be in the spotlight doing all that shiny shit Michael Jackson be doing in the spotlight, why the hell would you want to be in the spotlight? The spotlight is for who the spotlight for. Now, the spotlight. Only place the man who work in the spotlight finna get paid when he leaves here, and you never see him. But it's never that job people want. Everybody want to be in it. Like if my stomach's sticking out from Florida to Atlanta, why would I try to move D'Angelo out the spotlight when his stomach was looking like it looked on How Does It Feel? The women already going crazy on it. I shouldn't even be trying to move him out. He's like, man, let that man have that spotlight until you get your shit together and want to do it right. And if you're not going to do it like he's doing it, that's what's ruining it for us. Stay your ass out. And then you got all of them, my lips stuck out. Man, ain't nobody supporting me. Man, ain't nobody. Man, listen, because you want spotlight, maybe. If you was, it's going to happen. If you do what you do to the top notch, the spotlight gonna find you. When it finds you, though, it's going to fire you. If you're not willing to do what you got to do to stay there, get your ass out the way and let somebody else have the spotlight who's deserving of it and find something else to do.
But that's become a very dangerous thing, Thrill, in the industry now, because what you're saying is all facts. And what we're seeing now is that jealousy that people are having, which has always been there, because jealousy is when you have an intense hatred of somebody having something that you don't, and you don't want to put in the work to get it. And what we've seen now over the years is like we're seeing these artists that get mad at somebody because they get the attention. But I'm like, that person worked hard to get there. Now, we may not like everything this artist did, but they put in the work. It's like some of y'all motherfuckers want to get in the spotlight, and y'all ain't even put, you know, y'all ain't even do what it took to get there. And y'all don't even have the talent to get there. But now everybody, they all pissed off that this person doing what they're doing. I'm like, let that man shine, man. Stop hating.
Yeah, man. And it's not even necessarily hating at that person. It's just hating that they don't have the position that they will want, which none of us do. Meaning, Charlie Wilson was sleeping in a buggy behind a grocery store. He still had the same voice that he had when he sung "My Heart Is Yearning for Your Love." Or Burn Rubber. The only thing changed from the Gap Band Charlie Wilson to the Charlie Wilson that was broke sleeping behind the grocery store to the Charlie Wilson that's back now bamming was God's timing. That's it. That's the only thing that changed. So if you keep going, because the only thing about Tootsie Roll and 6ix9ine Boys, I was blessed with a huge hit out the gate, but God told me, I'm going to give you a huge hit because I don't want nobody to think they're doing it for you. Every time you show up, you're going to already have a star on your door. Ain't nobody never going to have to put no star on your door so they can be like, I did it for you. God is like, no, I did it for you. Now that you know that, go out there and do what you do. You understand what I'm saying? But
right,
you can't make yourself. I don't care who you is. Snoop Dogg still make great music. E-40 still make great music. Too short step. Everybody have a time at the top. And if you're going to get bought back to the top, if you keep doing what you do, I'm going to say, okay, your turn again. But other than that, you need to tell me Anita Baker still can't sing. Anita Baker can't sing like she's on the phone. Yes, she can. She done dropped music. They just ain't took off. Because God didn't say, okay, it's your time again. But when he do, we all going to be like, ooh, Anita Baker, boy, she ain't lost it yet. Because she ain't never lost it. Mary J. ain't never lost it.
Right. What they say God gives you can't nobody take away. And it's something that I think a lot of artists in terms of that humility would have to learn. You know, but that's hard for some people once they've been there and they not there no more. You know, but it's sometimes – but the thing is when you always have – like you said, when the shine is on you and you know how to make it shine – can't nobody dim your light. You know, you always going to have that light to make it, to illuminate.
Mm-hmm. But see, the and shine, too, the shine, the hardest thing to do is to make something shine that you're trying to make shine. Because shining and you just put the armor on, like if you just washing your car and you put armor all on it, right? You're
right.
Like, oh, okay, that thing's shiny. But if you got a hot day, I don't care how much you keep wanting to so milk. Because you'd be like, man, oh, man, it's. And people don't realize, my nigga, it's going to be shiny regardless. If you try to make something shiny that's already shiny, you can't make it. It's going to shine regardless. You understand what I'm saying? Overput stuff on it, but that's not gonna make it shine more. Once it's shiny, it's shine.
And that's the work that gets put in for it. It's like what we do on this show. You know, we've been blessed to where 551 shows. I mean, you know, and this podcasting thing is, you know, some people quit after one show. Some people quit after 10 shows, you know. But the thing is, you have to know, you have to trust your intuition, be passionate, and just do what you do. Like you said, you know, those people, we've seen people do things a certain way who like to interrogate people and get them caught up. We ain't doing that over here.
But,
you know,
for real.
We got a different way of doing it. Getting legends like yourself on the show to give us history, to give us wisdom about how this game moves and operates, about how it's okay to be an individual. When you think about it, Thrill, in terms of what you all helped lay down in the new generation that came behind y'all, you know, with Slip and Slide, of course, Trina, you know, Trick Daddy, you know, Rick Ross, and so many others, you know, Tay Dism. I mean, so many Florida artists that can't plies. I mean, what was it like watching their ascent and carrying on tradition for you all?
It's always a blessing. I helped a lot of those people because I was – I walked away from it to pursue what we were doing, but I was blessed to have the number one radio show in Florida in my markets, on each market. In Orlando, I had a 20 share. In Tallahassee, my share was higher than that of my day part, which is, and I'm saying that to say this. When
right.
I went into radio, my biggest goal was Tay Dism, whether it's T-Pain, whether it's all those artists you name. I was playing them. I was bringing them through my show when they was dropping music.
Now when you think, one story Rick Ross talked about, and obviously and we're not, you know, if it's a good story, we would love to hear it. What was it like when you first met Rick Ross in terms of when he was moving heavy, in terms of really getting, trying to get his music going?
I mean, I played a lot of Ross music even before he came through the show, but I would go down to Miami and write for Po' Boy Records. They had Jackie O. I wrote a lot of songs for different people with Yin Yang, T.I. I write songs, period, for and hooks and stuff like that. But I was
right.
in the studio writing for Po' Boy artists at the time when I first met Rick Ross when I had already been helping him with some of his underground stuff, but I hadn't met him because
this like when he was
Teflon
Don, right? This is Teflon Don.
Right, this
is
even
right?
before then. This is before that. This is before Hustling, big hit. This is
gotcha,
Rick
gotcha.
Ross on the this is on the record with Trina. Just a feature artist on Slim.
For that About the Benjamin soundtrack, right.
Yeah, back then. Yeah, so what I'm saying is, yeah, he was just like that. I'm down here and I'm seeing him like this, and then the next time I see him come in the city, like how we drop a Hustle and debut, like, you know, That's the kind of rhythm I got with a lot of these artists. Trina, Plies, all of them. If they jump after me, I was on the radio helping to push it. So, of course, I'm grateful to see all of them do what it is they do. Now, will they come back and tell the story that way? I do not know. But I stand on that story in front of all of them, and I can say all of them got broke by Thrill when it comes to music, 95% of them. Yeah. Including T-Pain. T-Pain, I wrote I'm Sprung. The record was called I'm So Hooked. I recorded I'm So Hooked featuring Sean J from Field Mob and Lil Duval. And I was the song was called I'm So Hooked, and I was talking about how, you know, I'm so hooked on this girl. I'm washing the dishes. I'm cleaning the clothes. I'm doing the laundry. I'm this, that, and the third. And no sooner than we left that studio, a couple of weeks later, T-Pain rewrote the record and came out of it as I'm Sprung. I never sued him because I got at the time I got 100 million records. And plus I had so much motion going on, I was just happy that the brother could take off and do his thing.
Right.
That's humility right
Man,
there.
Man, that... And the thing about it, man, is that that era of that early 2000s, mid-2000s, when the South was really, really, I mean, when you're talking about Atlanta, Florida especially, like you said, with T-Pain, with Plies, you know, Trina was, I mean, of course, we haven't even gotten into Georgia, I mean, with Gucci and Jeezy, Ludacris, and all of them. I mean, you all down South, I mean, Lil Jon, how can we forget Lil Jon? You know, I mean, you all had it in a chokehold, especially back then. We're getting history from you, Surreal.
I don't even think it was a back then thing. Let me just say this. I think, like you said, when Outkast came and made the announcement that there was a new region that the world was going to have to pay attention to when it came to hip-hop, I think it's just like, if they move you to a new school and it's nothing but girls, every day you're going to be turning your neck like, oh, man, I ain't never seen her before. Oh, man, who is this? Oh, man, you seen them girls outside the gym? It's just like you're in a new environment and there's so much going on. You're constantly seeing something. So I think now it's leveled out to where the West Coast get it in, the East Coast get it in, the Dirty South get it in. Everybody done made ways. So it's not no more who runs it. Okay, well, it's your turn to run 21 on the court. Okay, who got next? Okay, I'm next. Boom. Y'all lost. Get off. It's the next team turn. That's how it go every 5 to 7.
And that's real. When you think about like you said, how it works in cycles and how one person, like we think most notably – of which King and myself are both, where Griselda stands, to watch how Griselda came in with their run in terms of still doing it from their independent level. We hadn't seen a movement like what Westside, Benny, and Conway did in terms of really building it from the ground up and really finding their audience. And along the way, signing some hot-ass acts with them. But they, like, really showed, and of course, the late, great Nipsey Hussle, in terms of how he, you know, really built his shit independently. You know, the deal with Sony didn't do so well, ended up just taking it to the streets and, you know, moving it from there. But it's just to see that generation of entrepreneurship and to believe in yourself and, most importantly, have good music to back it, that's priceless on its own. When you decide to go into radio, Thrill, because I didn't know this until you told us it's about you having a radio show, so you just schooled us. What made you decide to go to that level in terms of really kind of expanding it to really kind of be more of a tastemaker and a door opener for a lot of these acts?
Make the next thing happen. I recorded a compilation album for my label, and I was doing a radio skit on there. And the program director from the radio station was like, "Hey, man, I was listening to your album. You sounds great for radio." They tried me and the show on the radio. They just tried me on the show, but I was born to lead. I'm not bragging when I say that leaders don't really want. It's too much responsibility. But here's what I say. If I walk into a room and it's 100 rappers and all of us show up at the same time, all of us cut the record, all of us put it out, and mine goes number one, and we all did the same thing. It was nothing special that I did. That's God showing me I'm meant to lead. If God showed me that, you ain't got to worry about what I'm finna do from there moving forward. I'm going to lead. So whether it was music or radio or football, whatever I did. So radio. in radio is a common thing. Huh?
Yeah,
no.
And I mean, but that's something. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm going to say radio is a common sense medium. When you get on, if you're a songwriter, you get a job. Sense. You make it about what you make the songs about, the other people and their problems. Anybody writing about themselves, man, nobody want to hear that. That's why this last generation got in and out. They tell they just so much. Marvin Gaye made songs that when I was home in my house and I started singing them, it felt like it was about me. Now, when I put on some new music, I ain't got no ops on the west side on this and that. I can't relate. I can't sing that shit while I'm trying to clean my house. But if it's something where the writer wrote the words as if saying, what is a person in Hawaii going through a relationship and they just broke up and want to get back together? What would they say? So when I went into radio, it wasn't about me. It was about, damn, who listened to the radio? A bunch of people. Who do they want to hear? A bunch of other people. I can come in here and I can play my music all day, or I can find Blood Raw and say, hey, man, come up here and tell your story and play your music. I could do what Off the Cuff Radio is doing, where it is inclusionary of other people. Those people bring their audience, which makes the show number one, which makes the song number one, just by creating opportunities for others that you are blessed and makes it bigger. And make you a mainstay. And that's what I enjoy the benefits from.
You mentioned Blood Raw Thrill, and he's a great friend of ours. We definitely, you know, we're in the process of getting him back on. He was with us a couple of years ago. Great guy, solid as they come. You know, and that's one thing we always, you know, I always say this, you know, King brought me on 6 years ago, and I can't thank him enough, Chinchilla Sandman, for them trusting me to come in, because what we want to do with this show, and we have done and we've been blessed to do, is we want to open up that door for everybody who we feel has a story and just has dope product. And we've said this before, no guest too big, no guest too small. We don't care if you got a million followers or one follower on IG. You know, if we think you're a dope person and dope music, we want to open up that door for you to come on and tell your story, because the worst thing for a lot of artists to feel is unappreciated, especially when you really genuinely put in your time, your effort, your whole life into it. And that's how some people end up becoming embittered with it, because they didn't get the results that they wanted. And sometimes, like you said, Thrill, not everybody's going to be that main player who's going to get to the pros. But the one thing you do want to feel like is that when you put something into it, your soul into it, that at least somebody recognizes it. And through us extending our hands to help people, we've had people abundantly help us more. You know, and that's what we want to do. We want to keep reaching back. Help, because for some of these, we look, King and me, we talk about this all the time off air. We talk about it on air. You got a lot of these people who are these shows that while they may have a big name, they're really about the clickbait. They're about the scandalous stories, but they're not about the music, and they're not really about the culture. It's about what they can sell in a very tawdry and what's the word, exploitative fashion, and we don't do that here. We want people to come on, have fun, feel comfortable, and be appreciated for what they do. That's just me on the soapbox, you know, but that's what we want
to
do.
No, it's a good thing. I mean, the name is, it's a lane for everybody. Like I tell you, if you miss at what you do, it's a lane for you. Look at 50 Cent.
Mm-hmm.
He was the best bully.
Right.
You don't care what you are. If you this make room of that. Now, number two, I don't know about your ass, but when you're somebody doing like what y'all are doing, you could tell your past. Put it this way. You would be very frustrated if you was rapping, But you can hear the peace in your voice because you're doing what you're called to do. I think a person who ends up frustrated from a career is doing something they wasn't called to necessarily do. Because if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you hear the peace in it. How the hell you going to get mad if your music don't never take off and God ain't never tell you to be doing this? You could have been the best car salesman. You could probably be a millionaire now if you would have followed God's plan for your life. But people around here not succeeding in stuff is not doing what they was born to do. If you do what you were born to do, you are guaranteed to succeed. Because you cannot tell me a person that is doing what they were born to do. Like, meaning, when you're born, you don't have a choice in that. God say, okay, I'm going to make you, Jamie Foxx, I'm going to make you to play Ray Charles. What if Jamie Foxx would have been over here playing steel, had played with a helmet on that time? instead of being over here playing Ray Charles. Then he would have been very frustrated. Nigga, you supposed to be over here doing what you was born to do. You're a Oscar, a Golden Globe, all that, because you did what you was born to do. So, no, I feel you, man. I sympathize with the people who are frustrated, but do what you was born to do. Like, we was born to be in better shape. But we keep talking about, oh, man, I ain't going to vote. Ain't nothing in it for me. But it's too. One, they want to give them reproductive rights. One, want to take it away. Get off your ass and vote. We'll be in a better spot. We'll feel better. And we'll do better.
And, look, I still believe in good old-fashioned American democracy, and I'm going to make my voice heard voting. And some people, when they get on that trip, I'm like, to me it's like you, and I'll say this on air, if you don't vote, you ain't got a right to complain about the way things are because you didn't make your voice heard to say you disagreed with something or agreed with it.
And I can say this on air. If you won't vote, you dumb.
You know, but I don't know how some people just get not trying to express their opinions about things. I'm like, dude, get out there and say something if you don't like it. You don't like what's going on in Washington? Vote for it. You know, vote to make change.
Listen, it's not even a pit. Like I said, I don't have to have an opinion about a woman's reproductive rights. I don't have to have an opinion about whether my grandmama going to need her Medicare or Medicaid. I don't have to have an opinion about that. I just have to have unselfishness in my heart to say, even though this vote necessarily is not going to get me no Viagra, it's going to help you at the doctor's office. And that's what being a public servant, a servant in life is all about. You understand what I'm saying? So you either going to be that person crying because stuff ain't fixed because you ain't going to vote, or you're going to be that person crying because ain't nobody supporting your music and God ain't never told you to make music. We all have to do our part in everything in life. And everything that we do for it to be successful.
And like God said, you know, faith without work is dead. You know, and that's where some people gotta, you know, everybody want to try to succeed without putting in the work for it. I'm like, no, you got to do it. And like you said, Thrill, when you really are putting in that effort, you're going to see, you know, where it takes you. You know, if you're called to do it, doing this show, the opportunities that have been afforded to us to meet people face-to-face, we grew up listening to interview them. I mean, we couldn't ask for a bigger blessing, and we're still being blessed to this day. You know, and I think artists have to understand, you know, and like you said, going back to the artist side of it, situations for an artist, you have to understand that the people ultimately are going to say what it is for you in terms of how they respond. And if they're not really responding to it, then that's not your thing. But you can't get mad at everybody else. Like you said, shout out to the late, great Andre Harrell. He did an article. XXL did an interview with him years back. And, you know, he was in a group, Two Kings and a Cypher. And he's like, I want to start rap because I wanted to get the girls. But he was like, it really didn't work out for me. But what did Andre Harrell do? He became one of the biggest music executives in history.
Period.
You know?
You got
to
know,
but
what you want. But you said something important. You said if you work hard at it. But if you pick it, listen, I can work hard as I want to be fine. That ain't in the cards, Jack. I could work to say, oh, I'm thrilled, but I'm going to be finer than Bernice Burgos or one of these IG models.
Jack,
right.
You was not born to be that. You can work hard as you want to. If you're trying to pull something off that ain't pull offable, what you're supposed to be doing. Oh, I'm going to work hard. I'm going to be a bigger white man than Nathan Bedford Forrest or Robert E. Lee. I'm trying to do that till the time come home. I can work hard at that all I want to. That's not going to happen.
Right. But that's facts. That's how, and you just, I think, for the most part, and when we look at a game today with rapping, I think we're doing music. We look at it from, see, we're all older. We came along in a different time of what the music really meant to us as an art and as a culture. If you didn't know how to rap, you didn't rap. You know, you weren't going to get in the game if you didn't really know. Yeah, if you knew you weren't good at it, you just didn't do it. But what we're seeing now is because social media and the means of which a lot of these youngins are getting in, and we're not hating because social media has helped us, you know. It's enabled us to do what we do, but we know our place in terms of what we've been blessed and called to do. I'm running a little bit with it, but it's like it's everybody thinks that they can get in and get on the microphone and do it. And I'm like, that's not – it is core of hip-hop. It's an art form, and it takes real skill to do it. And not everybody has that level of talent to do it. But the thing is, when you try to tell some people that maybe this isn't for them, then they get all mad at you, say you hating. I'm like, no, people not saying they hating. It's not hate. It's the fact that they know what's going to move the people and what isn't. And even if you get a hit song, the question is, can you continue that hit? You know, we don't put nobody on blast on the show, but there's a lot of artists who got a song out that may be moving crazy. But the thing is, can they get a whole album behind it, you know, or are they just going to be a singles artist? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. And my thing is this. You'll never hear me tell a person what they should or shouldn't do when it comes to music, because here's my thing. I believe everybody got a place. I believe it's a place for Vlad. I believe it's a place for Off the Cuff Radio. I believe it's a place. I believe that it's a place for every artist that do music. But some of y'all plays just not in the museum. Now, all art is in a museum. Some pictures you walk by, and some pictures you stop and stare at and say, oh, my goodness. Some you walk by and say, I don't even know what I'm doing. I want whatever the hell. But it's still in the museum because it's art. But some people are not everybody that make art make it in the museum. Some people make it in the mall, in the display. Some people make it over here at the youth center. Make it in art expo at the church. Some people make it at the flea market at the art table for sale. It's not up for people. It's to decide, oh, okay, this is where my music belongs now. Now, I want to get it to museum status, but you can't come in and Devo your way to museum status. No more than Picasso could his paintings. The people choose their king, not y'all, not meaning you, not the artists themselves. You put the art
right
out, the people will tell you where. If it fall over here in the youth center, but you want it in the museum, you got more work to do, not more complaints.
Yeah, and it appreciates
place,
over time,
you know,
when it becomes
big.
Yeah.
Yeah, the culture is big enough for everybody to have a piece of the pie, man. It's like everything in this world. It's just that you have the wrong people that's distributing pieces of the pie.
But in the wildest case, though. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Thoreau. Go ahead.
Programming radio. I'm like, I am. You still programming the 18 plus station? Like the old, because I'm a wisdom guy. Like I want wisdom, even in the president. I don't give a fuck. They talking about somebody young. I don't want nobody young president running nothing. I want old school wisdom. but if you ain't been to a club since you turned 40 and you 55 programming and you ain't been to a club for 15 years, that's the wrong job for you. You hurting the whole community, man. You ain't even got no outlook on what's going on, bro. You know what I'm saying? Go over there on the station right down the hall when you talk about family values, because you go home to your family every day. That's a different lifestyle. But you trying right to hold on to can't make a position because it comes with a salary and it comes with a certain amount of power. It don't matter if you done ran all the hot chicks off to the other station because you done gained 40 pounds. You used to be hot when you was on the radio and you used to know what was going on. But them girls, you met, babies, they moved on and now you no, man, come on now.
But that's the thing. Some people don't want to relinquish that position. You know, they're like, part of honor in terms of being emeritus, retiring with honor, is knowing when you've contributed, you've done what you've done, and it's time to move on and let the next generation have it. But your job while you were there is to make sure you left it in a better position for them to handle it.
And listen. If you was once the PD, you can stay here. Or you can work your way with him. It's just like if itself. Or just like what quarterback coach for it's just like the coach for who was coaching who used to be the quarterback for
Byron Leftwich.
He ain't be football. He just stopped being the quarterback and became the quarterback coach. This is what
right
we need more of in the music industry.
And that's fast. But a lot of people, they fall in love with that, like I said, the celebrity of it, like we were talking. And once they get in a certain place of it, they don't – It's okay to move into the background and work behind the scenes, but it's amazing how all this ties in what we've been talking about, because you got the people that want to be at the front, but that's not there, and they may have had it for a while being number one, but then it's like no one stays on top forever, and it is time to move on to the next phase of it. You've got some rappers who are talking like, I don't plan to do this forever. I just want to make my money, but then I want to move into other aspects. Some already have a transition plan in terms of what they want to do. And to me, that's admirable, because that means you have a plan. You're looking ahead. You're not staying in one area hoping that that's – because it's going to change, because the world changes. That's one thing that is guaranteed in this world. It's evolution. It is change. It's just the way of the world. And you have to adapt.
Man, I don't care how popular they was. I don't care how popular they was. Nobody we know who was.
Yeah. What are you saying, Thoreau? I was saying that
I don't care who the stay at the top forever. I never thought Ric Flair would not be the most famous wrestler forever. But even he, as popular as he is, he's still popular, but he not at the top. Nobody, I don't care who, Michael Jackson, I don't care who it is, nobody stay at the top. But these people, some of these people that continue to do that and try to do that are the ones that fade into irrelevancy, where, like you said, if a person makes the pit at the right time, it'll last longer in music and everything else just by knowing how to pivot.
Yeah, And the one thing about it is, Thrill and King, we never want to see our idols become caricatures of themselves, you know, because we always want to, it's like, it's called going out on top. You want a situation where you've done what you were supposed to do and you leave, you always want the people to remember you in the most positive of ways about how you did what you did. You know, it's something that.
Don't say you did what you did, because some people still do what they do. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Like Ronald Isley. He did what he did. He's still doing what he do at the top of what he do. He's still doing that shit in a top-notch fashion. So
right.
Not necessarily did what he did, but I get what you're saying. But I want to make sure out here doing it, make sure we see that. This is what
right.
you're still doing. You come out of that.
Oh, yeah. 69
boys.
So, I mean, when y'all do shows today, man, how does it feel knowing you all still get that love? And you all did not only just hit the hip-hop culture, you all are part of the world history of music now. How does that feel?
Hey, man, a blessing. The longest-running single in the history of Billboard magazine rap charts. The second longest running single in the history of any chart on Billboard magazine, rock, gospel, anything. That's Tootsie Roll, and that's a blessing. You can't replace love. Show up at these shows and to see the girls who one day back in the days used to show up wearing 80 pounds with their booty meat hanging out, and now they showing up and they wear 280 with their booty meat hanging out. Partying to us like yesterday. I'm happy every time we see that. We love them all.
Now, we got to ask you this. We got a little bit of time. We got to ask you this before the show ends. The Tootsie Roll remix with the Art of Noise remix. How did you all pull off that goddamn sample? Because that is like, I first heard that. That Tootsie Roll with that Art of Noise moments. I was like, duh, duh. I was like, yo, they said the remix. I was like, yo.
Man, that's all them years of riding in the back seat with mama. And just like with the Barry White, man, you hear them records coming up, and then you be like, hey, man, you never thought rap would come, but when it come up and you start hearing it, you, oh, man, this will go slick with that. And you know us being from Florida, all we used to listen to was Jam Pony. And that's all they used to do was mix and blend. So a lot of ideas we got just from being a part of the culture, studying, listening to what these guys doing, and listening to our mama drive us to school, and we hearing all that Moments in Love and all those My Life in the Sunshine, all them records your mama used to play taking you to school.
Mm. Man, I mean, it's yeah, and I mean, we're thinking about it now, man. One thing about it, and I got a crash course from it, shout out to Source Magazine, and a lot of people criticize them, but I don't give a goddamn. That Miami Zine issue with Luke on the cover from 1994 is one of my favorite issues ever, because it gave a crash course on the history of Florida hip-hop, you know, and it was just seeing how you all came in the game and etched your, you know, print in it, which will never be erased. I mean, you brought us this and that. I remember when I first heard their joint, and I was like, who are these two cuties right here? You all as a collective gave so much to the world. That's why we're so honored to have you on, man, because this is something we want to give you your flowers and everybody, you know, from that period along, your contemporaries along with y'all, man. You helped shape our childhood. You, Black Pat, Luke, you know, 95 South, Quad, I mean, all of you really, really, really made it special for us. And you gave us our musical education to endeavor. You gave us the knowledge to have that proper knowing. And here we are today.
Right.
We can't thank y'all enough for this. You all.
No,
thank
man. I thank y'all. I thank you for the roses that you're giving now. I thank everybody out there who listening, supporting. I better slide this in because my phone don't work all the way down to 2%. But y'all follow us on Instagram at official69boys with a Z or Thrill the Player. That's THRILLDAPLAYA or at FastCast69boys. That's all on IG. Twitter. Follow our page, fan page on Facebook. That boy's fan page, and y'all make sure y'all keep it locked to Off the Cuff Radio.
Definitely,
man.
Definitely appreciate you doing this.
Definitely thrill. You know, I'll be in touch with you as well. You know, you got our contacts, we got yours. You know, this don't stop here. You know, we always gonna stay in touch with you all, man. Thank you again so much. You're welcome back anytime. Tell Cash you got to come back on the next show, man. We got to get him with us, man.
Yeah, I'll let him know, man. Appreciate it.
But thank you so much, Florida. Y'all birthed a legend of many, and many more to come. This has been, yes. God bless you and your family, Thrill. We love y'all. Thank you again. King, take us out of here if there's nothing else.
Definitely, man. We appreciate y'all joining us. And we're going to be on live this Sunday night. Big thank you, Superman Thrill, for chopping it up with us. We had a dope bill. Be sure to check out any project, any show he's doing. And that's all. And subscribe. Hit that like button on us. Off the Cuff Radio, we out.
Hey.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.